primary focus of our program will not be a description of some of the biological or psychological chains of events that are known to underlie stress reactions. Instead, we want to spend most of our time dealing with specific prescriptions and practical suggestions of things that you can do to deal with stresses that you encounter. During the course of the program, we're going to be presenting several strategies for stress, above and beyond those that I've already indicated are suggested by the biologically based stress model. It's important that we carefully consider each of these strategies individually, starting with a base of self-assessment. It's also important that each of us understand not only the amount of stress that we're under, but the kind of personality that we bring into this stressful environment. What are we like as individuals? What do we value? What do we want? What kinds of successful or unsuccessful experiences have we had in dealing with different types of stressful situations in the past? So one of the things that we're going to do in this program is ask you to evaluate yourself against a number of profiles that are known to be related either to stress susceptibility or to stress resistance. A second major strategy area that we're going to be discussing is the physical habits that you have, the kind of patterns that you have in terms of smoking, drinking, eating, and physical exercise, all of which are known to be related either in terms of causing stress or in successfully reducing the amount of impact that stress has on your life. A third strategy in which we can take a variety of positive actions is building our support system. What is our family like? What kind of friendships do we have? Do we have social supports? Are there other people present who can help us deal with the stress that we're having? It is known, for example, that older people who live in old age with their spouse tend to live longer than those who are single. It is known that people who have pets will live longer than people who do not have pets. Having someone to relate to, even a pet, can be a positive stress remedy. And so we want to take a good close look at that support system. Nobody is in this world by himself. And if we are feeling that we are too alone, what can we do to take some positive action there? A fourth major strategy area we're going to take a look at, and kind of an exciting and a fun one, is the question of how we can strip our lives of stressors. We've indicated that the model of stress management suggests that we avoid stresses. And where can we systematically avoid situations that are difficult for us? A fifth strategy is to take a good close look at how much we care for ourselves. What is our self-esteem? What is the picture we have of ourselves? Are we still carrying a lot of negative tapes in our own minds? Are we continually saying to ourselves, I'm inadequate, I'm fearful, I can't do it? If so, we may be crippling ourselves and in fact have internalized a number of stressors that are far more damaging to us than the external stressors that the world is placing upon us. And as part of that self-esteem evaluation, we want to take a look at our goals. Do we have a positive, forward-looking plan in our life that reinforces our self-image? Or are we directionless, rudderless? Are we drifting in the world? Do we feel that we're simply being manipulated by external forces? Or are we underway? Are we driving with power towards certain goals? A sixth area that we want to look at is how we can re-engineer, redesign the work habits and personal habits in our life. A number of suggestions from the area of time management, for example, can help all of us, whether we're in business management or functioning as a person responsible for a household. How can we put the flow of work and the flow of tasks that the world presents to us into a frame of reference that will allow us to accomplish them and therefore get away from them? It is known, for example, that household clutter is a stressor for many, many people. Well, are there techniques to do housework? Because if we can find an easier way or a faster way to do some of those mundane tasks, it in fact creates less of a stressful world. The next two major strategies that we can consider are a play on words. What can we do to create, and what can we do to recreate? Do we have anything in our life that is of a creative, outgoing nature? Do we have positive avenues for self-expression? Are we self-actualizing? Are we able to look at the work of our hands or the work of our minds and be able to say, it is good? Can we find a confirmation of our own goodness in the creative expression of our life? And in the next and related strategy, can we recreate? Can we recreate? Do we have fun? Do we have not just enough vacation time? Do we have enjoyable times interspersed with times that are not as enjoyable? Do we prescribe a healthy dose of laughter as the best medicine? And lastly, our two concluding strategies for stress. What are we doing in the area of appreciation? Do we have the ability to give outwardly? Do we have the ability to give to others appreciation for what they do and what they are? Do we have the ability to appreciate in ourselves how wonderful and fabulous and terrific and great and beautiful we are? Do we have the ability to go beyond our own internalized woes and to give something to someone else? One of the great stress remedies is to do something that will benefit somebody else. It really does a lot to get our minds off our own problems, and there are a lot of specific prescriptions as to how that might be done. Last in our strategy steps is the consideration of what we can do mentally by way of meditation. What can we do in terms of our own religious beliefs or our own philosophical alignings of ourselves with the real world? What is our perception of the purpose of our life? Do we have, without becoming too intellectualized about it, a working faith, a working set of beliefs that help us to understand and to put into context the sometimes troubling events in life? How do we define evil? How do we define a meaning for a life that will end in death someday? Taking action in each of these strategy areas can provide a very powerful set of antidotes to the kinds of stresses and poisons that you're having to contend with. One of the things suggested by this long list of strategy areas is that not only is it a good idea to take action in one, but we should practice multiple therapies, multiple treatment areas, multiple strategies, borrowing a few ideas from one and a few ideas from another, and perhaps two or three other suggestions from yet a third strategy area. Because if we have multiple elements, multiple facets to our attack on the stress management problems in our life, there is in fact a greater probability that we'll be successful in handling stress. So let's go on then with the specific approaches in each of these important areas. As part of our evaluation and understanding of ourselves and how we react to the situations in which we find ourselves involved, it's important to understand the ways in which stress manifests itself in our lives. A variety of common symptoms or illnesses are generally stress-related. That is, stress can express itself through a variety of avenues. It will show up in a variety of behaviors and physical symptoms that we can use as a guide to determine when we're under stress and how we're dealing with it. Let me go through some of the major symptoms as we consider the signals that stress sends to us. First, let's look at the physical indicators. We know that headaches and eye aches are common expressions of stress. Now, not every headache or eye ache is a stress reaction. When we're talking about headaches, we're looking at those that we might call tension headaches, and we're looking at headache patterns. Headaches that seem to keep coming back over and over and over again. The kind of headache that you wake up with in the morning and isn't caused by alcohol may be a physical indicator of stress present in your environment. Allergies are another common stress reaction. 70% of the patients being seen by allergists are believed to have some form or some level of psychosomatic problem. So Some of the patients that allergists see literally have nothing wrong with them physically. That is, when they're tested for allergens, things that cause allergic reactions, absolutely nothing is found because they are showing physical symptoms of a stress reaction. Well, they have hives, they have spotted skin, they have other symptoms that a dermatologist or an allergist will recognize, yet there is no physical allergen present. In such people, 100% of their symptoms are the result of stress reaction. More often, allergists see people who do have known allergies, for example, to ragweed, but find that their ragweed reaction at a given time is much more acute than it has been previously, even though the pollen count may not be higher. What's happening is that stress is exacerbating or worsening an existing condition. Another means by which stress is physically exhibited is the common cold. Watch for this, particularly in children. I'm talking about the kind of cold that keeps recurring. Little Johnny has colds all winter long. What's happening in Johnny that causes the red eyes and the runny nose and so on? Can he verbalize to his parents, "Gee, Mom and Dad, as I consider the stress model and as I consider the various strategies for stress and my stress points on the stress test that I've taken, all indicate I'm in trouble"? No, he can't verbalize any of that. So he goes to Mom and Dad and he says, "Mommy, I got a cold." And what Johnny has learned is that he can avoid having to go to school with Miss Potts. And this is a way in which he can not only avoid Miss Potts, but can stay in his room and play with the toys and watch television. I'm not suggesting that all headaches, eye aches, colds, and allergies are caused by stress. Many of them have nothing at all to do with stress reactions. I'm simply saying that these are ways in which stress is often expressed. Other physical symptoms include back pain. An interesting thing about back pain is that it is commonly reported among those who are physical laborers. The college-educated complain more about allergies. College-educated people may understand allergies better and therefore are more susceptible to them as stress symptoms. And employers should understand that while some employee back problems can be caused by heavy lifting or poor training in how to lift, they can also, in fact, be caused by stress, simply because that is a socially acceptable pain to have in that worker's environment. How about excessive fatigue? Have you ever had a period of time in your life where you didn't seem to be able to recharge the batteries? After 8 hours, you were still tired when you woke up? You used to be able to recharge on the weekend. Now you take 3 days on a long weekend and you still can't seem to quite get your act together. Is it just that you're getting older? Maybe this excessive fatigue is a tiredness of dealing with the world that you're experiencing. We know that there are other hormonal changes that occur. Menstrual changes and impotency are often stress-related, and these are typically temporary problems. They occur with the onset of a stressful period of time. It is a way in which the body sends a signal that says, "Hey, something's out of whack in the biochemistry here," and things do not function the way they normally would function. Increased blood pressure is a commonly understood associated symptom of stress. As the heart is pumping harder and harder, trying to deal with the world around it, the blood pressure literally is going up. Consider ulcers, colitis, upset stomach. Have you been pumping a lot more Tums into your system lately? These are common reactions. As that blood flow is diverted away from the digestive processes to the skeletal muscles to contend with the fight or flight needs that you may have, the stomach is left with decreased blood supply, is unable to continue to process any food. Under stress, the body has increased its output of hydrochloric acid, and that irritates the stomach lining. We know that these are problems associated with stress. Our resistance to disease is not as high as normal because the white blood cell count under conditions of stress decreases. Consequently, people who are stressed are more likely to catch other kinds of secondary illnesses, the primary problem having been that their normal defense mechanism has been sidelined or lowered. And of course, there's the heart attack or the stroke. In these cases, the body finally gives up, unable to contend with the load. Do you know what your physical symptoms are? Some people, as we've gone through this list, have been able to identify one or two. I certainly have some of these. The headache or the eye ache are typical stress expressions for me. I'll occasionally have more allergic reactions in the fall than I might otherwise have. And I've come to know and to welcome these symptoms because I realize that my body is sending me an eloquent message. It cannot verbalize this message, but it is raising a red flag, and it is saying, Clay, something has gotten out of whack in your life. Clay, take a look at what's going on in your life with the load that you're currently experiencing. And when you see these kinds of physical symptoms, don't be ashamed of them. Don't think that you should not have them. Do not feel bad that you have had to miss a day of work. Instead, ask yourself the question that the symptoms should prompt in you, and that is, what is going on in my world right now, and what needs to be changed? What can I do to help my body rather than having to deal with an illness or deal with a physical problem? What can I do to relieve or remove the cause that is creating this physical response? Let's turn our attention now to the mental symptoms and illnesses that are also known to be commonly associated with stress. Again, not every one of these problems is always caused by stress, but these are common avenues through which stress can manifest itself in an individual's life. Again, we'll go from the relatively minor problems up through to the major ones. Anxiety, nervous tension. We all have days when we're a little uptight. We all feel a little pressure. That kind of symptom is a normal response to the abnormal situations that we have to contend with. And sometimes that anxiety can be caused by things like too much caffeine, but more often than not, it's a sign of too much stress. For example, a person may have difficulty in concentrating or making decisions. He's had a very bad day at work. He's sitting at his desk now trying to concentrate on a major project, and he just can't seem to get it together. Just can't. Staring at the papers, looking at the reports, and he can't quite get it to gel in his head, and he thinks that he's losing it. He's focused somewhere else. We go to Ralph and we ask for an answer, and he says, leave it with me. And he stalls on a decision for 6 weeks. What's the matter with Ralph? Well, maybe it's a tough decision. Or maybe it's just that he can't quite concentrate well enough because he's preoccupied elsewhere. His energies and his thought processes are all revolving around some other problem. Sometimes we'll see changes in personality. Sometimes we'll see changes in language. And the changes in personality are not usually as severe as the depressive who becomes very manic, or the manic who becomes depressive. Occasionally we will see a real reversal in personality, but that's not very common. What is more commonly found in terms of personality change is that a person's normal traits become more intense as though magnified. If normally an outgoing, fairly happy person, she becomes manic, irritating, and alienating those around her. The person who normally is a little withdrawn, a little quiet, retreats inward and becomes extremely quiet, becomes extremely inhibited. We see a change of this personality expression, most often a deepening or an intensifying of what the person is. The language change is often expressed in terms of a hostile language, profanity, swearing, or critical comments being directed toward others. And if you think about what that language means, it's really signaling, keep your distance, stay away, stay at arm's length. He may be criticizing the cooking. He may be criticizing what the kids are doing. He may be swearing at total strangers. This is behavior which sometimes comes and goes. Some of you, for example, normally wouldn't use words that would be offensive to other people. You're kinder than that, and you're more well-mannered than that. And yet there's a 6-week period in your life when it seems like every other word is a swear word. And if you're living with such a person, it's sometimes tempting to say to them, "Hey, God's going to get you for that," which does nothing but add an additional stressor called guilt into their life. Perhaps instead of doing that, what you might want to say to that person is, "Mary, Bill, tell me what it is that's happening in your life that makes you feel the need to use that kind of language. Is there something you want to talk about?" Sometimes that language change will revert to a more normal vocabulary later when the stressful situation has resolved itself. We're all aware of the person who, as part of his behavior pattern, is a griper, complainer. He's irritable, he's never pleased, and it is kind of an ineffective way of dealing with the world. But what he is doing is trying to put some distance between himself and the current situation. By making a complaint or by criticizing what somebody else is doing, what he's really saying is, "I'm okay, they're not okay." It's kind of a denial of the reality of his own current feelings of inadequacy or inferiority. He doesn't want to accept the responsibility for what may be a bad situation. And so he gripes, complains about what others are doing. It's Freud's classic projection defense. Another symptom, depression, or the blues, or what some call the blue means. I'm not talking about the normal cycles of up and down that we all experience every day, but the person who gets down, gets really down, and stays down for a long period of time. Depression is probably the most common form of mental illness that you are ever going to see. You're likely to see it in a family situation. You're likely to see it in a work situation. And the depression reaction is of a person who has become very apathetic, feels beaten down, feels defeated, just doesn't seem to know how to cope. It's a real drifting period in their life. It's certainly a more severe problem, and as I said, probably the most visible form of mental illness in society generally. One of the other mental symptoms sometimes associated with stress is insomnia. I'm not talking about the normal change in sleeping patterns that occur as we get older. When we're 16 and 17, we sleep like a rock. When we get to be 45 or so, we don't sleep quite as well. And as we get to be a little older, sometimes we're a lighter sleeper. Some of those are normal sleeping pattern changes. But let's consider the kind of insomnia where we can't get to sleep at all, where you get to sleep but you keep waking up and this becomes a sleep pattern. There's something troubling you. There's something that your mind wants to continue processing, so you wake up and you worry about it. Sometimes it turns out to be helpful because it gives you some quiet time that you may not have been allowing yourself to take, and your body, your mind, is insisting in a normal way, "Let me help you get this problem resolved. Wake up." And that insomnia may be, in fact, a helpful reminder to you that this is something you need to process and think through. Other kinds of changes that we might associate with mental symptoms are changes in physical substance usages. Diet changes, drinking changes, smoking changes, drug changes. Change is the important word. Maybe you're a heavy eater in unstressed times, but in very stressful times, you really go overboard. Or you may not eat at all. And we have read recently in papers of a number of famous people who have suffered from anorexia nervosa, an extreme change in normal diet. Maybe you're normally a one cocktail a night person, but in difficult or stressful periods, you go to two cocktails a night. Or you normally smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, but start smoking two packs a day for a period of time. Or you begin experimenting in the drug scene. What these behaviors are signaling is a difficulty in dealing with whatever problems are occurring and a kind of dependency on physical substances. In fact, nicotine acts as a sedative. It is a depressant. Drinking does the same kind of thing. It blocks out certain conscious processes, at least temporarily. Certain drugs do the same thing. People find a friend in food sometimes when they don't find friends in the real world. And we have a tendency to fall into these traps. Be careful, because this behavior makes us dependent on something that really does not deal adequately with the stress. And yet it's a symptom of our desire to do something with the stress. The acting out behaviors, the hitting, the physical violence, the abusiveness, the crime, in fact, often are stress reactions. We're not excusing criminal behavior when we make that statement, but we are saying that sometimes if you drive people through life under enough pressure and under enough difficulty, you can create antisocial acts that society will label criminal. Some people, if they had had a job, if they had had some education, if they'd had a supportive family, if they hadn't gotten dependent on certain substances, would never have gone to prison. In fact, the cards that life has dealt them have not been entirely in their favor. And lastly, attempted suicide, an extreme example of a stress symptom. Unfortunately, at that point, it may be too late to take action. As we've gone through the list, have you been able to identify any symptoms by which you typically respond to stress? If you have not been able to identify those symptoms, go back now and think them through. Because if you don't know what the red flags are that your own body communicates to you through, you're going to be in serious trouble. Be thankful for these symptoms. Be cognizant of these symptoms. Be responsive to these symptoms. They have a purpose. That purpose is to make you be aware that you must take some positive, prescriptive action to remedy the problems causing your stress reaction. Richard Pryor woke up in that hospital bed after a very serious accident in his life, and he was aware that the time had come for him to get his act together and to shape it up. He has talked openly about that, and it's a helpful example to all of us. When we see these symptoms and we get to the point that we're aware that they're trying to tell us something, then we too can take some positive prescriptive steps.